The Catholics of Oz is brought to you by the StarQuest Production Network and is made possible by our many generous patrons. If you'd like to support the podcast, please visit sqpn.com/give.
You're listening to Episode 1 of The Catholics of Oz. Catholics of Oz is a show where we discuss faith, culture, and what's been happening from an Aussie's perspective. Whether it's synods or science, apostolates and apps, providence or productivity, you can hear it right now on The Catholics of Oz. Hello, my name is Lindsay Sand, and I am the host of Catholics of Oz. Welcome to this brand new show on the SQPN network. We're very, very excited to be sharing this episode with you. So before I begin, I might introduce all of our panelists. So starting across from you is Caroline. Caroline, how are you?
Very well, thank you.
Welcome to the show. And Jared, how are you today?
Excellent, Lindsay. Good to be here.
So those who are listening, you remember that you can like Catholics of Oz on at the SQPN Facebook page. You can retweet our episodes on Twitter, leave comments, subscribe on iTunes, on Google Play and on Stitcher and TuneIn, or your favorite podcasting app. On YouTube, you can listen to us there, but don't forget to hit the bell on YouTube so you can get notifications when we post new episodes. You can also leave feedback on iTunes and other podcast directories and share the podcast with your friends and help us grow our community and reach more listeners. So in today's episode, we're going to be discussing a couple of different things. This is a show where we discuss all kinds of topics. So going from faith matters, looking at faith in and the culture and how they work together, talking about what the church has been doing recently, and especially how Australian Catholics have been contributing to the life of the larger church. We also like to talk a little bit about science, and Caroline will give us some interesting things to talk about while Jared and I sit here and hope that we can understand what she's saying. And a couple of other things as well. But why don't we introduce ourselves first? So, Caroline, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Well, first of all, I'm your sister.
Yes. Very true.
I'm a mum of two young boys, Frankie and Harry, who are 6 and 4 years old. I have a normal day job. I write environmental reports. I also publish my own children's books for little children, picture books. And, yeah, I've been a Catholic all my life since birth, like all of us, yeah. And, yeah, I have a keen interest in science, especially space science. Probably the majority of our science segments will be focusing on what's happening in space. And, yeah.
Great, Caroline. And, Jared, why don't you tell us a bit about yourself too?
All right. Well, keeping the family connection going, Lindsay, you're my brother-in-law. via marriage, and so Caroline, you're, I guess, your family too. I'm a little younger than you guys, but similar situation, I guess. Wife, two kids. So, funnily enough, we've all got two children now, so we can all compare and compete. I've got the only girl daughter out of all of us, so we've got, between us all, we've got 5 sons and 1 daughter. Work as all of us here do. Work the 9 to 5. At the moment, it's more like 9 till 7 because that's tax time for you. Yeah, as I said, tax accounting. It's been my numbers have been my passion and what I know, and so that's become a profession for me. I've been a Catholic since birth, so I'm born Christian or born Catholic, and raised in the Catholic faith, and I've been trying to pass that same on to my family and my children.
Thanks, Jerry. And yeah, so as I was mentioned before, I'm the host, Lindsay, and I'm a high school teacher. That's probably takes up most of my life. I've been doing that for about 14 years now. So I teach mostly senior kids, teaching English and religious education. As Jared mentioned, I'm a father of 2 sons. The latest son just born this year, the first one born 9 years ago. So we've got a bit of a gap between our boys, but we love them both. And yes, as you could tell, we're all related in some way, shape, or form on this show. So we'll try and behave ourselves anyway. So why don't we begin with our first segment, talking about what's been happening in Rome.
If serving the needy gets in the way of all being close to the Lord. No, we are to be like Christ, who responds to every plea for his help with love, mercy, and and compassion. The Golden Rule also reminds us of our responsibility to protect and defend human life at every stage of its development. No one who sleeps can sing, dance, or rejoice. It's no good when I see people who sleep. No, wake up, go ahead.
So as I mentioned, this is a segment about things that are happening in the larger church, but from an Australian perspective. So today we're going to talk about the Synod on Youth that just finished very, very recently in Rome. So this was a synod that went for a month, and it was a gathering of a large number of bishops from around the world. And their focus at this synod was, how do we help to assist young people to be integrated into the life of the church? And most importantly, the whole idea is, how do we show that Jesus is relevant to young people? So because there is a bit of a gap that we acknowledge between young people and their understanding of what the church is and what the church has to offer. And there are a number of reasons for that, and this is why the bishops got together to try and work this out. So from an Australian perspective, we had three bishops from Australia who were invited to go. So the first was Archbishop Anthony Fisher, who is the Archbishop of the Diocese of Sydney. And we also had Archbishop Peter Comensoli, who was just recently installed as the Archbishop of Melbourne here, and one of the auxiliary bishops of Melbourne, Bishop Mark Edwards. From my point of view, these three bishops are probably, I mean, there are a lot of other bishops that we could mention as well from Australia, but these were a really good choice in terms of bishops who would know something about young people, who are very good communicators with young people as well. And they represent a broad variety of Catholics across the church in Australia. So today what we wanted to do was talk about the interventions of these popes. At the synod, at the very beginning, all of the, did I say popes? I meant to say bishops. I just caught myself out. So the interventions of these bishops, all of the bishops had a chance to basically contribute a couple of ideas at the very beginning to help guide some of the discussion, and also to respond to the document that had been published before the synod as well. So some of the responses were quite interesting, and in this case from the Australian bishops, because for us, we understand the context that they're talking about. Different bishops brought their own context. But in terms of the Australian church and where young people are with the Australian church and as a result, the wider church, the bishops had interesting things to say. I wanted to talk about Anthony Fisher, though, because he initially got quite a lot of attention for his particular speech. His intervention wasn't so much what we should do, but it was a wide-ranging apology to young people for some of the failures of the church, which was a very interesting way to go. And from an Australian perspective, this makes a lot of sense. He said things like, for example, for shameful deeds of some priests, religious and lay people, perpetrated upon you or other young people just like you, and the terrible damage that has done, and for the failure of too many bishops and others to respond appropriately when abuse was identified, and to do all in their power to keep you safe, and for the damage thus done to the church's credibility and to your trust, I apologize. And this is quite a powerful statement, because he tackled sexual abuse as the first thing in his intervention. Because when we look at it from our perspective here, this has been a big news item, especially over the last couple of years, and especially with the Royal Commission into Institutional Abuse, of which the Catholic Church was one of the parties that was investigated as well. This is one of the main things that that comes up when people talk about the church online and you know, in other places where young people you know, look online to talk about things. So what they would have heard through the Royal Commission, and in some ways justifiably by Archbishop Fisher's intervention as well, is that young people, you know, see a church of people who don't listen to the laity, who have shunned the laity and covered up instead some of the terrible things that the church has done. Some other things that he said as well were that he said, for when we've sold you short, not encouraging you to live heroically, your baptismal call to holiness and the paschal path to life through self-renunciation, or when we provided too little youth ministry or other support. So you found living as a young person of faith and ideals lonely and in a secular, often cynical world, or when unbeautiful and unwelcoming liturgies have failed to inspire or include you, and when you've been denied the church's treasury of examination of conscience, reconciliation, adoration, pilgrimages, penance, and devotions, I apologize. So another point that he was going for here was basically poor catechesis to young people, so that the passing on of the faith wasn't really happening. And you could argue that there are some places in the church in Australia where young people are decorations. You know, look at those young people in church. Now they need to sit down and be quiet and not do anything and participate. And so the life of the church hasn't been open to them. So Archbishop Fisher's speech was essentially an apology. But he also then spoke of hope as well. And he said, "But I say to young people also, never give up on Jesus because of our failures. Never give up on a church that you can help make more faithful. Never give up on a world that with Christ and the church's help, you can make a better place." So guys, I was wondering about your response to this. This is an interesting way to begin with an apology and really laying bare some of the things that that are uncomfortable about the church in Australia. So, Jared, I might throw it over to you first. What are some of your responses to Archbishop Fisher's intervention?
Well, what I see that he really addresses is the unapproachability of the hierarchy. So to run a church, you do need a hierarchy. There's no question of that. But what I think is perceived by younger people today is that there's no way to break into it. Or if you do, you must be pious, you must be holy, you must be the best. And if you're not that, then you're not worthy. And that's the indication that I think is it might be their perception, perhaps. And you know, there will be a certain great element of truth to that. And I think what Archbishop Fisher is saying here, that no, that's not no longer the case with what's gone on. And again, with his apology, saying how badly that some members of the hierarchy have failed before, that's no longer the case. Your ideas are welcome. Your contribution is welcome. And he wants to encourage this. He wants it to be out in the open that young people, as you said, aren't a decoration. They aren't there for show, now sit back down, that they are relevant. And I think with what he's saying there, yes, he's definitely the openness and the need to apologize is excellent and courageous. He's not breaking ranks to do it, but he is, I was going to say breaking protocol, but he's not really even doing that. But it's something that is not an easy thing to do, to apologize. Let me get backtrack what I was going to say. I just sidetracked myself. Yes, that's because... Sorry, where he says, not because of us. Don't lose faith because of things that have been done in the past. And again, as well as with the hierarchy not being able to intervene within that, because we can't intervene, we're going to go. Because we can't change things, we're going to go. He's saying, well, don't do that. Because you have a place in here and you got a place within this church and you are important to this church. I think that sort of sums up what he's saying pretty well.
And I want to then now just pass it over to discussion about Bishop Mark Edwards. So he's an auxiliary bishop for Melbourne, for the whichever region, it's divided into four areas, one of the regions, north, south, east, or west, you're going to get one of them right, so one in four chance. But he was discussing that this synod represents a new era of interaction with young people within the church. And he's also been quite open about saying sorry for things as well. So I remember going to the Australian Catholic Youth Festival in 2015, it was in Adelaide, and he got up and spoke, and he apologized, interestingly, personally, to the young people of my parish, which is really interesting because my parish has a history, beyond, before our time or whatever, but it has a history of being part of this whole problem as well. But he apologized personally, and he's done that, my understanding. He's gone to parishes and he's apologized for this crisis as well and for things too. But his message was a bit different to Anthony Fisher. So what he was going on about was the idea of this is a new era. And what he was saying was we need more intergenerational encounters. And the whole idea really is bishops listen to young people because young people are the ones who know how to evangelize other young people. He was saying they're the ones who live in the world. You know, they're the ones who are on the internet. They're the ones who are, you know, out there, you know, living the world as we understand it. They're not confined by, you know, by duties and jobs and whatever else. And they're interacting with each other, and they're the ones who know the culture, and they're the ones who are going to set the culture in the future as well. And so what he said was basically that we need to look for and develop other ways to be missionary evangelizers of young people as well. And he was saying that we need to trust the young people a little bit more. He said young people are closer to being natives in this new era than we are. They more instinctively grasp the lay of this land with its values of equality, inclusion, respect, authenticity, and the integration of multiple aspects of life, such as the body and the soul. My suggestion is that fertile intergenerational encounter, in my country at least, might involve us saying to our young people, you show us the lay of this land, the way to the place where you dwell, and we will show you the way to God. So Caroline, I'll throw this one over to you. What do you think Mark Edwards is saying about the interaction between the church and young people from his intervention?
Well, for me, I take it as, you know, on the parish level, we've got obviously different generations within our parish and, you know, we have a lot of older people who've been going to Mass for a long time. And for me personally, I would say I would love for the older generation to be able to teach the younger generation and encourage the younger generation like my children to learn more about their faith and, you know, to keep coming to Mass and to, you know, maybe perhaps suggest different prayers and encourage them to look at different saints for examples of how to live the good Christian life and all of that, you know. So I think that instead of, you know, having a big gap, perhaps we could bridge the gaps within our parish instead of the older people over there who know their faith really well. And maybe sometimes, just from my perspective, can sometimes be a little bit judgmental in the younger generation. I look at them, they're not paying attention in church or look what they're wearing or, you know, that kind of thing. Perhaps, you know, it would be lovely if we could all come together and, you know, kind of learn from each other and see each other's perspectives on how we practice our faith and that kind of thing, you know. And it would be like we have a youth mass every once a month. At our parish, and it's really nice to see the youth taking part, taking some of the roles that the older generation usually take. And, yeah, it's just some more integration, you know, and seeing the youth and the younger people taking part in Mass and making it their own and really, you know, we're sharing the Mass together, you know, as, you know, every Sunday and, you know, as a norm rather than something that's a once a month type of thing. Yeah.
I think as well what I like about it is the fact that he's given them an identity within. The identity of a young person at the moment, as we've sort of put out there before, is you can do this and then get back to your seat and we'll get on with running the thing. In our church, we all go to the same parish. There has been a shift of sorts. Someone, you know, instead of an older person hosting, say, the Christmas carols, they've started getting a younger person or younger persons to do so, as well as, you know, leading choirs and getting involved in the commentary, the readings, the Eucharistic minister. There's always something to be involved in, and I think it's more in showing that age is not a barrier for these things. To be involved, you don't have to have passed a certain age or done a certain, you know, level of things, gone to a certain number of places to be eligible. You're eligible by your baptism and your confirmation and by your presence. And I think it's been shown to the younger people before that's not the case, but I think the bishops are now trying to articulate that this parish is, this faith is yours, and trying to encourage and show them that is by their actions.
That's a great way to move on to our own Archbishop Peter Comensoli. So basically along those similar lines, Jerry, he was talking about the church then using that Pentecost image. You know, we've heard over, you know, different leaders and so on talk about a new Pentecost and things like that. And Peter Comm and Sully said, well, where might this fire, you know, something, you know, this thing integrate our young people and this fire for them and this fire of their faith, where might it be found? And he said, at Pentecost, when the church was first young. He said, the church that strode out of the upper room was one of extraordinary missionary vitality and gospel of joy. The disciples did not wait for people to come to them. They got up and they went out. They were the first intergenerational missionaries, Peter with John, Mother Mary with Mary Magdalene, Paul with Timothy. The church was alive, energetic, and young in Christ. And then he throws down this challenge. But is this a true description of the church of today? Are we, the successors of the apostles, also the successors of their Acts? Or have we stagnated in the spirit, lost our missionary fire, and become beholden to a fake gospel of religious maintenance? Then let a pebble of spiritual disruption be dropped into our stagnant pools and stir us back to Pentecost. And this gives me a bit of hope, because I do like when bishops talk about Pentecost again, because for me what it says is, let's remember the church and its origins and those early heroes of the church who boldly did things, and let's rediscover that boldness. And I think there have been, I mean, the stories of the saints and the untold stories of untold saints as well, it's their boldness that we recognize. They weren't anyone special. We know that a lot of the saints were messed up people just like we are, but they were messed up people with a bit of boldness. And this is what Peter Comensoli seems to be saying as well. You know, are we just going to sit in this autopilot kind of church that just, you know, that says, yeah, people come through the door, so we'll just do the bits and pieces we need to do. Thank God that's over. See you next Sunday. Or are we going to, you know, or another Christmas over? Thank God we got through the Christmas liturgy. Thank God we got the Easter liturgies over, you know, without getting any of the words wrong in the reading and mispronouncing and doing embarrassing things. We need to set our sights a little bit higher. And, you know, it's not just for the bishops, even though he was throwing it down to them. It's for us to think about as well. Where's that Pentecost boldness? And how are we going to reopen that, rediscover it, and refire it again, so that young people look at our church and look at its beauty and all of its gifts, and what Archbishop Anthony Fisher was saying in his one, all the beautiful treasures that we have, so that they can see the beauty of those treasures themselves and appreciate it too. So let's move on from there. Caroline, we're going to throw it over to you now, because it's time to discuss why we like science.
Ah, what a fine day for science.
You have any hobbies?
I collect spores, molds, and fungus.
Can you reverse the polarity?
I'll do my best.
So, Caroline, on this show, we love science. There's all kinds of wonderful things going on. You know, every day on Facebook, you'll see, you know, the Vatican Observatory talking about this, you know, NASA talking about that, you know, Elon Musk launching another rocket and fortunately it making it into space and doing what it's supposed to do. There's all kinds of wonderful things. I know that space science is a bit of a passion of yours. So you gave us a couple of things to mention that are really, really interesting. So why don't you start by talking about the end of the NASA Dawn mission?
Yeah, well, so the Dawn mission is a really interesting mission. I've been following it for a little while now. It was first launched about 11 years ago. Unfortunately, as you mentioned, it's come to an end. The poor little probe has run out of its propellant, hydrazine, which, you know, the propellant they use. The interesting thing about this mission, it's gone to the asteroid belt. Now, the asteroid belt is located between Mars and Jupiter, and it's quite a large area that I don't know if most people really know about it. I think we all know, well, a lot of people know, if you're into space science, know about the Kuiper Belt, which is, you know, out near Pluto. We've also got an asteroid belt in between Mars and Jupiter. And in this asteroid belt, NASA recognized two large bodies termed dwarf planets. Well, we've probably a lot of us have heard of dwarf planets because unfortunately, well, we think unfortunately, that Pluto was recently demoted to a dwarf planet.
I'm still in denial about that.
Yes. Well, I will always consider Pluto a planet, a full-on planet. There's two dwarf planets that they were investigating. Firstly, they went to one called Vesta, which is, it's quite large, but it's not as round as the moon. It looks a bit, it's just a rocky, you know, body. And then after that, they went to another one called Ceres, which does resemble the moon quite a lot. It's, you know, a spherical, it's got a lot of craters on it. But as they were investigating it, you know, orbiting it, they saw these amazing bright spots. They termed them bright spots. At first, they didn't know what they were. But when they did find out what they are, it was quite amazing. They realized that these bright spots were actually areas of salt deposits. So they're thinking that this is actually a geologically active dwarf planet. It's not just bumbling along, just, you know, orbiting around the sun. It's actually doing something. And so what happens is briny deposits, they think there's a subsurface made of, you know, it could be a liquidy type thing. We're not quite sure yet. But there's deposits of salt that get pushed up, either get pushed up through some geologic activity or craters are formed when something bashes into the poor little thing. And these deposits are shining through and they're made of sodium carbonate, not carbonite. Sorry, Star Wars reference there. So that is quite an interesting thing that they discovered about Ceres.
So how do you get salts on Ceres? How does that happen?
Well, it's actually part of the planet itself, and they think that Ceres is actually one of the first bodies that was formed when our solar system formed. And they are investigating, part of the reason they're investigating Ceres is to try and understand how our solar system formed. why do I keep saying that? Formed. And to understand geological processes and, you know, all that kind of thing. Now, this sodium carbonate I was reading is actually kind of a rare thing to find in the solar system. They found it on Earth, they found it on Ceres and Mars, I think is what they were saying. So it's not like it's a very common substance that is in the solar system.
Now, I'm going to put on my nerdy hat for a second.
Put it on.
So there's this wonderful, wonderful sci-fi show that I watch called The Expanse. And it's the whole idea is that our solar system has been colonized, and Ceres has been colonized as well, and it's being mined for water. So, I thought it was water. I could be wrong, but there's natural resources on there that are being exploited and used for, you know, the rest of the solar system, whatever else. In terms of salts on Ceres and other resources on other, you know, moons and whatever else, is there potential for colonization, say, of Ceres to exploit salt and other resources, or is this a science fiction dream?
Well, I mean, look, humans, if they put their mind to it, they can do anything. I mean, you know, there's the plans of colonizing Mars, and maybe I even read orbiting Venus in balloons and living in balloons over Venus.
Heard that one.
Yes, that sounds like fun. That's a recent one I read about. Yeah, I think a balloon planet would be fantastic. But I don't know about the atmosphere on Ceres and all the rest of it, but I'm sure that it's not that far away. I mean, it's just past Mars.
Can you catch an Uber there? Or
I don't know if Uber do interplanetary travel
Not yet.
But, I mean, look, there's no reason this would be a really costly exercise. If it was economically viable, if there was something valuable on Ceres, of course we could do it. I think people are looking at the moon, our own moon at the moment, to mine our moon. I mean, it's a lot closer than having to go all the way out to Ceres. But anyway,
All right. Yeah. So moving on to famous scientists. So so Georges Lemaître, and I hope I said that properly, Belgian scientist.
Yeah.
And Catholic priest.
Yes. Yeah.
So he's credited with coming up with what would later be called the Big Bang Theory the theory of the expanding universe and so on, which was you know, it's an amazing discovery and so on. But he recently just got some recognition in a big kind of way. So do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so the IAW, the International Astronomical, I forgot. But
is that the official title?
Yes. Anyway, it's the body that is responsible for like naming things in space, and and demoting Pluto to dwarf planet status.
This is part of their redemption.
Yes. So there is currently the Hubble law, which describes this expansion of the universe. Now they want to recognize Georges Lemaître to include him in the law. So they would call it the Hubble-Lemaître law, and to recognize him officially for actually coming up with the law and making him a part of this scientific discovery instead of just ignoring him, putting him to the side. So they had a vote about this, I think it was last month. And the majority of people actually voted in favour of renaming the law. So look out for that.
That's fantastic. Yeah. It's almost like the Synod on Youth voting for the paragraphs. So yeah. A similar kind of idea. This last one, I'm not actually sure if this is science, but I threw this to you because I thought maybe you should talk about it. I think it was last month or the month before, I was reading on Facebook. And I'm sure it wasn't fake news.
Was it fake news?
I looked around at lots of other news. I mean, they could have been played by someone. However, it says something on the lines of China deciding to create a moon, like an artificial moon to light cities or something like that. What's going on there?
Yeah, so the news is that China would like to launch a fake moon. They're terming it, the media are terming it the fake moon, over China, and they would like it to be a source of light at nighttime for China. So in order to reduce the cost of having to light up the city, the country, China is a city, country. So the idea is that they would launch, it's like a combination of three mirrors that, you know, somehow constructed together, and it would orbit. I'm assuming that it would stay in orbit over China, and it would be not at the distance of the moon, but it would be, they're saying, about the distance of the International Space Station. You'd hope that they don't cross paths, but to replace lighting by electricity, they would have this huge setup of mirrors in the sky. They're proposing to have this launch in 2020. So
this is a set of mirrors of some kind.
Yeah, to be like a second moon. So when the moon's not there, they have this bright moon. It would be actually brighter than the moon to have to light up the whole place. But personally, I don't like the idea of having any artificial light source in the sky at night. I mean, for me, just the first thought is, as a backyard astronomer, having this artificial light would be terribly intrusive on my stargazing.
So get out of the way. Move.
Yes. And, you know, I mean,
they're blocking my view of Venus.
Exactly. I mean, some things are quite difficult to see as it is. So imagine having that light there. I mean, sometimes the moon is beautiful, as gorgeous as the full moon is. Sometimes it just gets in the way. So to have another light source at night would be quite annoying. But they also think that perhaps it would disrupt animals who have, you know, it would disrupt their system and maybe put them out. And I mean, I think we already kind of are doing that to some animals with all sorts of sonar and all the rest of it. So, I mean, we shouldn't really be playing around with artificial light sources at nighttime. And imagine the people who just can't sleep at night anyway. You have this huge light. I mean, I have a street light outside my bedroom window, which keeps me awake at night. So imagine this.
Well, I suppose my concern is for the werewolves.
Oh, they'd be terribly confused, wouldn't they? They'd be like, what? Is it that time again?
Am I meant to transform now?
Yeah. Now, from what I understand of this, I think it's going to be focused over inland China. So I think we'll be expecting them to host the first inland surfing competition in 2020.
How does that work?
With the moon and the tides. And then so the moon being full, they're going to have an inland surfing competition. Be the first of its kind.
Yeah, I want to see people surfing on grass. Or do you mean lakes and things like that?
Yeah, rivers.
Gotcha. All right.
Just to correct myself, that was the International Astronomical Union, not W. Sorry, that's why I got confused.
Right.
But that is the body that have decided to rename the Hubble Law to the Hubble-Lemaître Law.
Great. And we'll follow, well, if there is anything, if this fake moon / fake news, possibly real news.
Are they going to do any gibbousing?
Oh, goodness. There's a song about that, isn't there? My son sings that song. There was like a song about the phases of the moon. That was, yeah. I wonder if it will have phases or just be a
giant
light.
No, it's just going to be
a
mirror.
Full moon tonight.
every night. Okay, so let's move on from there. It'd be interesting to see if this actually happens or not. But we'll see.
Apparently, yeah. A few years ago, Russia tried to launch something similar and unfortunately broke up on the way. It crashed into something in space, so that wasn't very successful.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's a bit awkward. We'll finish on that note. So let's move on to talking about how faith has moved beyond its borders.
Well, I'm actually feeling rather good about this. I think we've all arrived at a very special place, eh?
Oh.
Spiritually, ecumenically.
How do you make somebody love you without affecting free will?
Welcome to my world, son. You come up with an answer to that one, you let me know.
Yes, I had to work very hard to pass Latin and theology.
Oh, quite. Those are, of course, the most important things.
Oh, yeah.
I'd sit this one out, Cap.
I don't see how I can.
These guys come from legend. They're basically gods.
There's only one god, man. And I'm pretty sure he doesn't dress like that.
So this segment is basically looking at how faith material has moved beyond the borders of the church and Christian life and has found its way somehow into, you know, everyday society. So I'm going to start with one that I didn't think I would start with, and even Caroline gave me a lot of puzzled looks when I said we should talk about this. So you might remember a particular singing artist from maybe possibly a decade ago, if I got that right, or even more. Yeah, so it was Avril Lavigne, and so she was famous for songs like Skater Boy and things like that. And I have to admit, I wasn't a big fan of her music and still aren't really. I'm still not really like too keen on songs like that. In fact, I get frustrated sometimes because Skater Boy is actually every now and then the music for one of our lunchtime bells at school. So we don't have bells, we have songs, and you know, and the students pick them. And for somehow, Skater Boy made it back into the circulation. And the part that hurt the most was that I knew most of the words because I heard it so many times. So, all right, I have to admit, and I don't know how this is going to sound, but I dismissed her music in her first run, which is why I was so surprised to hear the lyrics of her first single release in years for a song. That was to do with her recovery from an illness, but it was basically a prayer. So she released a song, and the name of the song now that we're talking about it has escaped me, but that's okay. The song was basically to do with her going through Lyme disease. It was called Head Above Water, and basically she was suffering from Lyme disease for a while, and basically she described in a letter about her return to music that. This song is about how the feeling of being underwater was the same as the feeling of her body shutting down. Like, she felt like she was dying. When she fortunately recovered from this illness, she wrote a song that is basically, I would describe it as almost like a modern day psalm in some kinds of ways. Now, it's not a psalm, don't get me wrong, but it shares similarities in that it shares the feelings of a person about their relationship with God. and in some cases their reliance on God, which is what the Psalms do as well. And she says things along the lines of, you know, asking God to be with her on her journey, to keep her head above water, which is this idea of keeping her away from death. The idea of feeling too young to die, she mentions that as well. And then also saying things like, you know, I will meet you there at the altar, you know, while I'm on my knees praying to you. So, and the whole idea of this song is, you know, she'd recovered, but this is also for people who are suffering from other diseases as well. And it was to raise awareness about Lyme disease and the issues associated with that. So I was surprised by this song. And I'd say pleasantly surprised, because I thought it's probably a useful contribution, considering that she's known as a secular artist. She's not a Christian artist in the sense that she writes, you know, exclusively Christian songs. And she's come back with this song, which did quite well in the charts as well. She's willingly put God into, you know, into the music space for people to listen to. So, you know, take note, bishops of the synod. This is maybe how you reach young people in one particular way anyway. So Caroline, because, I know that Avril Lavigne is not the, again, you're still trying to deal with the fact that we're talking about Avril Lavigne. What do you think about this whole idea of producing a song and putting it out there for people who have particular illnesses and so on?
Well, look, I was a bit surprised we were going to talk about Avril Lavigne, but look, I think this is a really positive thing. And look, when I read the lyrics, I immediately had a personal connection with this song. I didn't have Lyme disease, but unfortunately a couple of years I did have a bout with breast cancer. I'm fine, thank God for that. But, you know, she talks about, you know, talking to God basically in her song and asking her to keep, you know, her head above water. You know, she wanted God to help her through this horrible time in her life. And I can relate to that immediately, because when I was suffering with this and had to go through all the surgeries and just having to deal with the fact that I had this horrible thing in myself, my mind went completely blank. I couldn't even pray for myself. I couldn't ask God anything, but I had so many people praying for me around me, literally everyone who heard about it, even those who, not necessarily Catholic, offered prayers for me. And I felt those prayers. I was carried through the disease. And when I came out the other side, I woke up again and I was able to thank God. So to put a song out like this, I think it's fantastic. I think that she is so brave and courageous to just push society apart, push society away, who, you know, these days to be a Christian is like, oh, you're a Christian, you're one of those. But for her to be, if she's Christian or not, even just to talk about God in this way, it's really such a positive thing, and puts God back in the minds of people, even if they perhaps were not even thinking about it. And especially those people who are suffering with something, it gives them a bit of hope that, you know, perhaps if somebody like Avril Lavigne, who's really famous and had something that, oh, she got unwell just like I got unwell, you know, just like the common person gets unwell, could give them something to hold on to and to look at, and, you know, perhaps they can reconnect with God as well. And, I really found this a beautiful story after I got past the, initial, I mean, Avril herself seems like a lovely girl, you know, it's just not my type of music. But, I actually thank you, Lindsay, for bringing this to the table, because it's just a beautiful, heartwarming story.
Yeah, and thanks for sharing that story, Caroline. But it is interesting how we can connect with something that we least expect. And like you said, I'm just imagining, because of her boldness to produce a song like this, the connections that other people, you know, will make to firstly her situation, and then possibly to the possibility of God in their lives as well.
She may be evangelizing without even realizing.
Yeah, and I don't know her situation in terms of her Christianity. I didn't look it up.
Yeah.
Maybe those of you who are listening might know more about this than we do and can tell us about it. But I just think, from a particular perspective of the idea that she's known as a secular artist, not as a Christian artist, and to do something like this is quite bold and quite interesting. and for many people, unexpectedly inspiring as well. So, Jared, how about you? What was your response to this?
I suppose mine was a little different. I mean, we all had the same sort of reaction when we heard Avril Lavigne, because when we hear her, no offense to her or anything like that, but we think of songs that don't really have a whole lot of substance, let's say. You know, we keep referring to Skater Boy. Then there was a song of something about Complicated, and it's the kind of thing, you know, a teenage girl sort of might have gotten into back, 15 years ago, and us being past that, and, well, myself and Lindsay never being past or part of that, it just didn't resonate with us at all. I suppose what it points out for me is, and it's good to sort of link into the Youth Synod, is that this is the substance, this is the change that can come when someone's had some life experiences. Unfortunately, Avril had quite a life-threatening one, but just the change of 10 to 15 years, what a change it can do to a young person. So you think, young people, 15, 20 years old, let's say, and, you know, they're pointing and laughing and not paying attention in church. Oh, they're bad people. Let's not pay any attention to them and push them away. 10 or 15 years from now, this is what they might be like. This is what a life experience will bring is a change. And this is why, coming back again to that Youth Synod, is why the archbishops are pushing to get these young people involved, because they're raw, they're still learning, they're still getting life experiences, but they are the future, and this is what they become in the future. This is what they can produce in the future. And so for me, that song, while it didn't have an effect, it didn't affect me personally because I've, luckily, touch wood, fortunately, thank God, etc., I've never had to, have anything like that happen to me. The change from someone who just sang about songs that were, so superficial and didn't touch me or reach out to me at all, the lyrics of this one, wow, what a change.
Yeah, and I've got to say as well, one thing that happened with this song that was unexpected for me was that, so I started listening to it. When I'd heard about it, I started listening. I didn't realize that Damien, my 9-year-old son, was listening from another room. And so he came in and goes, oh, what's this about? And I said, oh, apparently it's about this girl who was ill and, she's praying to God and all this kind of stuff. And Damien, so his kind of music at the moment is Minecraft music. So he loves, they make a lot of, on YouTube, there are Minecraft songs, and they take, actual songs and they put lyrics about Minecraft kind of activities like mining, whatever else, over them. And he loves that kind of stuff. And what he does is he likes to print out the words of these songs and then just have them and take them around the house. Well, to my surprise, he printed out the words for this song because he found this song quite beautiful as well. I was shocked, but I was pleasantly surprised because, this is, I think what he found interesting was the same thing as me, that this was a secular artist singing about God, and he found the song quite, the tune itself quite nice. But now the lyrics as well. So, the thing is now, that's there and that's a seed planted in my son. And I'm really grateful for that as well. So let's move on. I just wanted to talk about something else in terms of faith going beyond borders, because, as lay people, we can do what we can, to try and, in our situations, to try and evangelize and get the message of Jesus out there. But it can be quite challenging because, your audience, our audiences are not always entirely receptive. And, like I said, it takes a bit of boldness and it can be, there's the risk of embarrassment and the risk of, rejection and things like that. And no one wants to experience those things. But at my work, so like I said, I'm a high school teacher at a Catholic school. And I work with wonderful staff. They're all great people. And they're all good people to rely on. And they all have different backgrounds. Some are practicing Catholic, some are not Catholic at all. And everything in between. Some have had connections to the church in different ways and whatever. And so what we do is, every first Friday of the month, we gather for prayer where we have our normal morning meeting. So all of the staff of, of the campus I work at, every Monday and Wednesday and Friday, we have, our briefing, which is where we talk about the news of the day that we need to get ready for school and whatever. But on the first Friday of the month, before we have this meeting, we go to the chapel and we pray and all the staff come along. And, it's my responsibility along with a couple of other colleagues in my team, to organize a prayer for something. So, because it was All Souls Day, when we had our last prayer, we decided to go on the theme of the idea of how people write the names of people in a book, like the deceased, you know, people in their lives and whatever else. But instead of writing a book, we thought let's do something visual that everyone will see the result of afterwards. So I got a whole bunch of sticky notepads and placed them on a table. We had everyone sort of sitting in a circle this time around. And placed it in the center with some pens, and we read the gospel read from John's gospel. You know, Jesus saying, "There are many dwellings in my Father's house," and things like that. And then what we did was we invited everyone to come up and write down the name of someone who's deceased that was a family member that was important to them, or a friend or a mentor. So anyone who was deceased that had an impact on their lives, to offer them as part of our prayer. And what was really nice to see was that the majority of people in the room got up and they wrote something. And, you know, knowing the backgrounds of everyone, it was wonderful to see a lot of people participating. So by the end, we had a cross covered in sticky notes with people's names. And we offered those names in our prayer. So that was our book, but it was a cross instead. And that was there on display for the rest of the day for people who were walking in and out of the chapel to see. So for me, that was... just another way that of breaking down the borders and pushing our faith beyond the borders and into the lives of people in a way that shows them that faith content is beautiful and meaningful and it has connection to their everyday lives as well. So let's go with our last one. And I was surprised this actually happened. Caroline, I'm going to throw this over to you because you've actually had a chance to do this properly. Very recently, an app was released. I don't know if it's on both platforms, but it's definitely on the iOS platform, and it's an app called Follow JC Go, or if you stretch it out, Follow Jesus Christ Go, which is very similar to Pokemon Go, which I'm very, very familiar with, maybe too familiar because of my son. The whole idea of this app is it's the same principle. It looks pretty much the same, but your character, as you walk around the streets, look where you go, please don't fall over. Hasn't happened to me, but look where you go. You collect saints and you collect characters from the Bible and so on. So Caroline, why don't you tell us about your experience with this app so far, because you've had more success than I have.
So basically, I was a big Pokemon Go fan. Okay, I had it on my phone for many years.
Got to catch them all, Caroline.
Yeah, I did. I caught quite a few. Especially I love the little special Pikachus they had with the cap on and Santa hat and everything. Anyway. So, yeah, I did download Follow JC Go onto my phone, and it looks pretty much the same as Pokemon Go, except, look, the hardest thing for me, I have to say, is at the moment it's all in Spanish.
Yeah, it's one language at the moment, yeah.
And I know a few words in Spanish, but I'm not Spanish, so I don't know a lot of Spanish, but it's enough to help me navigate through. So basically, yes, what you do is, so like Pokemon Go, you will be able to see if there's a saint somewhere, and you can click on the saint, and instead of trying to catch, you don't battle the saint, obviously, like in Pokemon Go, but what you have to do is they will come up with a question and it will be a fact about the saint. So for example, actually they had one of the apparitions of Mary. So it had a question that I could make out this apparition of Mary. So she asked, "I'm this apparition of Mary, and I appeared in this in 1950. Is that true or false?" And I had to say yes or no, basically. And from my mind, from the apparitions that I know, I don't know of any in 1950, so I just put false, and I got it right. So, and then you get points in the form of a chalice. But I'm not quite understanding properly yet because it's in Spanish. But you can also collect bread. And
very Catholic.
Yes. And so anyway, it's actually really educational. So it teaches you about the saints. It teaches you about apparitions of Mary, the different kinds and all that kind of thing. They do have – it looks like they have flags up the top that you'll be able to select English soon. So when that happens, it will be – the gameplay will be a lot better for non-Spanish speakers. They have a few other languages up there as well. So that was quite interesting. And I think it's going to be really fun. So I'll keep it on my phone and I'm going to keep trying to play it in Spanish for now. and try and collect more saints. I mean, they're everywhere, so it's really
good. Catch them all, Caroline, catch them all.
I'm trying to catch them all. So, yeah, I can see this becoming addictive, just like Pokemon Go was.
Yeah, so I'm going to rely on the English version because I don't have a Spanish person that I can take around with me for a walk and say, hey, what does that say? But I remember when Pokemon Go came out, Damien and I did go for walks. It was good.
You know?
And one of us was able to look at the screen and one of us was able to look where we're going so that no one fell over onto any objects. So it would be good, you know, to possibly, depending on how good this app is, I don't really know much about it yet, but it'd be good to be able to walk around with my son and talk about saints and talk about biblical characters. I think that would be a very, very good thing.
Yeah.
I know that he would enjoy that too because he gets to press buttons on the phone and find things.
Exactly.
And what kid doesn't like to go on a treasure hunt of some kind?
Yeah, it's good to open up the dialogue with your kids about saints, and especially because my kids are really young, you know, and I don't think they're going to sit down and read a book about the saints just yet. So, this is just, you know, they get little snippets of what effect about the saint, and it might encourage them to go and read a bit more and, you know, relate to that saint, and it's quite fun in a quite fun way.
And plant seeds for their confirmation one day as well.
Well, that's it. Well, Frankie in a few years will make his confirmation, so we're going to have to start thinking about, I mean, obviously maybe St. Francis, but anyway, we'll come up with somebody that he, can identify with and he can be a role model for him.
Yeah. Do you know my most wonderful Pokemon Go session was actually in Rome.
So, oh, yes.
Yes, in 2016, I took some long service leave and had a family holiday with my wife and son. So Alexander, my 8-month-old, didn't exist at the time, so we were, you know, flexible enough to go overseas. Damien was 7. And every now and then, just to make it interesting, I would pull out Pokemon Go for Damien. So I whipped it out at the top of St. Peter's Basilica. So you can walk up the stairs, you know, go to the top of the dome and see wonderful views of, you know, of the Vatican and so on. You can walk around and whatever. So I said to Damien, I said, do you think there's any Pokemon up here? He goes, can we check? He gets excited every time. So I pulled out my phone and he opens it up and had a look. And it turns out there's actually a Clefairy at the top of the Vatican. That's what we worked out. So in case anyone was interesting, there is at least one Clefairy at the very top if you want to climb those stairs and catch it.
I'm off. I'm going now.
Yeah, there you go.
Going to go find it.
Motivation to go to Rome. I mean, the Vatican's there too, but, you know, there's also
Pokemon also. Yeah.
So let's wrap it up there. So if any of you who are listening today, firstly, thanks for listening to our first episode. If you'd like to make any comments, we'd love to hear from you and share some listener feedback as well. So thanks for joining episode one of Catholics of Oz. Yeah, that's a bit like us, isn't it?
Yep.
The Catholics of Oz.
Odd Catholics.
Yeah. So you can send us feedback by visiting us at sqpn.com/Oz, spelt O-Z or Z, depending on where you're from, or the SQPN Facebook page. You can also send us email to oz@sqpn.com. All the relevant links from today's discussion are going to be in our show notes at sqpn.com as well. So please be sure to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, or TuneIn, or wherever else you listen to our podcasts on. And please also remember to write a review for us. So reviews would be really good to help us to be seen by other people, and also for us to be able to share our podcast and reach more people. Caroline, thanks for being on the show today.
Thank you. It was fun.
And Jerry, thanks for being on episode one with us as well.
Yep, good start. Let's hope we can keep it going.
And once again, I'm Lindsay Sand, and thank you for listening to The Catholics of Oz.